You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Jessica Helfand writes, to read another person's scrapbook is to acquire a body of knowledge about an entirely different time and place. Ms. Helfand, who's a designer and an art critic, joins me now to talk about Scrapbooks, an American History from Yale University Press, a look into what the history of scrapbooking reveals about cultural life in this country. It contains many gorgeous photographs of scrapbooks from the past couple of hundred years, and I'm very pleased that it brings Jessica Helfand back to the show today. Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Now, your background is in the arts, so would you call scrapbooking an art form or something else?
I would call it an outsider art form. I think that one of the reasons it's so difficult to harness into any category is that they're not vetted. They're one-offs. It took me forever to find the examples that I found in my book.
And how do you find them? Are they?
I spent a lot of time on eBay. I spent a lot of time
people
in
sell
libraries.
Them? Why don't they hold
Isn't
on to them
amazing?
As family... These are family histories.
They are family
they're
histories.
They're heirlooms.
And they're so poignant, the idea of how personal they are and how specific they are and what capsules of American social history they are. It's not a scientific study I've done, but I can say with some assurance that what I found is that the reason they secede from their families is because there were no children to hang on to them.
How have historians regarded scrapbooks?
Well, I think until recently, somewhat suspect. They're a bear for archivists and librarians. They're impossible to index. You can't parse them easily. They're impossible to put into collections and know exactly what it is you're going to find because there are no page numbers.
And they may be fun to look at, but I'm sure many people thought that they reveal things only significant to the people directly involved.
Well, I think probably biographers would take would think that they were of some value, but they sort of exist, I think, at the margins of what is permissible.
So how much insight do they actually provide a historian or an academic?
I think they provide a great deal of insight to the extent that what you find is never what you expect to find. And for every 100 scrapbooks you go through, the 101st is as puzzling as the first. So that's what it's really...
Puzzling why?
Puzzling because I think that the cues that are set up in any kind of diary lead you to understand what you think is going to come, and it never is what comes. And so you have to... It demands an inordinate amount of patience.
Do you see this as another version of a diary?
I see it as a more fascinating, more layered, more like a palimpsest. Because diaries, I think, by their very nature, like calendars, have to have a certain quotidian structure to them. And there's nothing chronological about scrapbooks.
But there's another thing. Diaries are often meant to be very personal, not meant to be read by anyone else. And scrapbooks are meant to be looked at by as many people as possible.
It depends on the scrapbook. I've certainly come across scrapbooks where people saved letters with the addressee side pasted down, or they've written shh on top, or do not enter. So it's never clear what was meant to be public and what was not.
When did scrapbooking begin as a popular pastime?
Well, there's some myth that suggests that it began more recently than not. The boom in scrapbooking, which I wrote somewhat critically about on my blog 3 or 4 years ago.
And got a lot of
flack
for it.
And was just vilified. And it's not the only time I've been vilified. But let me just say that part of what led me to write this book was a chance to set the record straight. And part of the record that I wanted to set straight was the fact that it was not always a gendered activity. Mark Twain kept scrapbooks. Thomas Jefferson kept scrapbooks. Mark Twain patented a self-pasting scrapbook in 1872, in which the patent application actually said that it was good for the church because if you had the glue already in the book, you wouldn't swear as much looking for the glue. So he thought that the sort of the end of blasphemy that was suspected was a good thing.
And did it serve a different function when it was somebody like Thomas Jefferson and Mark Twain as opposed to the proud mother of a family?
It's an excellent question. I think that you can look over time at this kind of trajectory of expression, which I found mirrored very much sort of the rise and fall of various things that were going on in the early part of the 20th century. The focus of my book is really about 1875 to about 1945, because once the war was over and the television entered the living room, I think the scrapbooks that people made became much less interesting. But I think initially you really see this kind of birth of modernism in America that's a result of people being able to grab onto things, rescue things, the sort of detritus of their lives, and find meaning, sort of make meaning, figure out where they're going in life by keeping these visual diaries.
We've seen a rebirth in recent times. People like Martha Stewart really promoting scrapbooking. Is it for the same reasons that people did it in the past?
I think people have always wanted to make their memories somewhat less ephemeral than they might otherwise be. I think I have a theory that in times of great tragedy or following great difficulty, war, for example, 9/11, that there's a surge in people wanting to make diaries because, of course, you feel an incredible sense of increased vulnerability. So what better way to fend off that vulnerability than to cement something in a book? But I think that I didn't want to organize the book chronologically because that's the story of printing, and I wanted it to be about the story of people, and that to me was much more interesting. So the point of entry for me as a visual historian and maker is visual, but once I got in there, there had to be stories worth telling.
Well, when did you start thinking that this was an interesting story to tell? How long have you been collecting scrapbooks?
I have been interested in what I call visual biography since I was a graduate student at Yale in the late 80s. And I spent a great deal of time in the bowels of the Beinecke Rare Book Library looking at Ezra Pound's correspondence with T.S. Eliot. And I found that in looking at the postage stamps and looking at the handwriting and looking at the physical evidence of what that transaction was so compelling. And I was just very interested in that kind of biographical, literary, sensual connection between materials and how that could tell a story. And it percolated in my brain and in my sketchbooks for 20 years till I wrote this book.
Well, most of the scrapbooks I've seen in the past, the ones that my mother maintained or others that I knew maintained, were simply photographs that were put in with those little four corners holding them in place, and maybe a couple of other things like letters. But most of these scrapbooks, at least the ones that you have in this book, are gorgeous.
Thank you.
So I tried. People are really, in this case, really see them as a lot more than just ways of holding on to certain memories.
Well, I'm not the first person to say that great things have been made from the art of limited means, but certainly that there's a kind of an inverse proportion to me to the difference between contemporary scrapbookings that's so heavily based on store-bought new materials and the fact that people really just made sense of what was there and kind of corroborated some kind of story. And the story may have been fictional, may have been completely fallacious, but I think it's very interesting to see how people, I mean, why a young woman would cut off the heads of her family members and put them in a birdcage in 1922, but in 1895 she wouldn't. Well, you know, she wasn't anywhere near the world of what was going on with Dada and Surrealism in Paris, and yet something trickled down.
So this also reflected the way the popular culture was
exactly
impacting
it.
People's lives. As you say, that woman may not have known that there was such a thing as Dadaism, but it still was in the air.
Exactly. Or you get these really poignant juxtapositions, a prayer card next to a picture of Rudy Valentino, a steamy picture from a movie next to a box of Barnum's animal crackers. I mean, you can just sort of see somebody coming of age through the pages of their scrapbook.
There are celebrities in this collection.
There are.
This was Zelda Fitzgerald, Lillian Hellman, Anne Sexton.
Who should I talk about first?
Whichever one.
Well, Zelda Fitzgerald.
She's the most troubled of the three.
She was a great favorite of mine because she, I think it can be said, was such a troubled person. And also she was good at a lot of things, but she never finished anything. So the scrapbook, in a sense, was her ideal medium because it was this fragmented language, visual grammar that she could just make whatever she wanted. In Lillian Hellman's case, she was someone who saved clippings of herself. People said things like, she's the kind of woman who can take a bottle cap off with her teeth. Mm-hmm. But then she saved four or five pages of the rough drafts of hate mail she wrote to Tallulah Bankhead. The final one, of course, was published in Time magazine. So you wouldn't think that a woman like her would have been so concerned with public opinion, but we're all concerned with public opinion.
My guest is Jessica Helfand. Her latest book, Scrapbooks, An American History, what is generally called a coffee table book because it has to be of this size and shape to give us a real sense of what the scrapbooks are all about. It's published by Yale University Press. Do we get a sense of F. Scott Fitzgerald through Zelda Fitzgerald's scrapbook?
I found some interesting things in looking through her scrapbooks, which are at Princeton, by the way. She also did reviews, and she was actually asked to do a review of his book. And she saved the review she'd written of The Beautiful and the Damned, I think it was, in which she said, interestingly, I found passages in here that were very familiar to me. It seems that Mr. Fitzgerald, M-dash, I think that's how he says his name, M-dash, thinks that plagiarism begins at home. So here she is, like, writing a review of his book, publishing it, putting in her scrapbook, and, you know, then making collages on the next page and talking about her music and her dance. So it's sort of interesting how her personal life became very much a part of this thing, and her public life was her personal life.
As you look over the course of this survey, do you see certain things that are constants?
I think people stumble and they make mistakes, and that's what I found ultimately. So there's something deeply humanizing about reading these things. People were late, they were scared, they were... I have a scrapbook from a woman who saved, during Prohibition, saved a list of cocktail recipes, and she spelled champagne wrong. She spelled it like the town in Illinois, and I realized she's from Chicago. Probably someone came up to me at a lecture I gave and said, that's probably why, and I thought, of course. So as you start to spend time with
these things...
Or maybe
she was drinking water from Lake Champlain?
Or maybe it was that. So you find that people stumble and fall. There's something very, genuine about them.
And in the end, they are, because they're both personal and they're public, we get a weird kind of a conversation.
It's a weird conversation. And also, you said a moment ago that they don't have photo corners. They're not all photographic. I went to great lengths to not just include, for every scrapbook I included, there's thousands that are just newspaper clippings or just photographs or just something that is a sort of a monoculture. And I was really interested personally in the eclectic barrage of complexity that you know, if you look enough, you really find in those early scrapbooks.
What do you think about the modern trend of faith booking?
I don't know much about it, but I will say that there's a very distinguished legacy among the Mormons and members of the Jesus Christ Church of Latter-day Saints, I believe is how it's said, to document your family history. And so the sort of overlap with genealogy and family tree experts and people who belong to Ancestry.com has a very sort of strong foothold, I think, in the Mormon community. And faith booking is really... an extension, I think, of that, of really not only documenting your history, but making it have some religious presence that is ongoing.
It sounds like Facebooking. Do you think Facebooking is a kind of ephemeral version of
scrapbooking? Well, this is an interesting thing. I mean, you really do have to wonder. I was giving a lecture to the undergraduates at Yale last year, and a young woman raised her hand, and she said, well, isn't a modern scrapbook just what Facebook is? And we had a very interesting discussion with these young students about... what is ephemeral when it's digital? What happens when you have a status update and then it goes away? Now, I'm sure there are people, I'm sure there are artists out there who are saving their Twitter updates and their Facebook updates and probably making use of them in some other form. But they really do just completely dissipate and go away. So I don't know the answer to that. I mean, my reaction also is that Facebook is so public, that the line between what is public and personal is much more difficult because it's so out there.
Now, there are, I assume... scrapbooks from people of all races, colors, and creeds. Are there traditions within different groups?
I went to great lengths to try to include scrapbooks from people from different parts of the country, men and women, rich and poor. What's interesting is how many men there were, a great deal of men there.
Where did the myth of it all being women making scrapbooks come from?
I'm not exactly sure, but there's been a great deal of research done in recent years about women's need to be creative. There's a woman wrote a dissertation on women making me time and the need to be creative, and then there's this kind of sanctioned world out there in the craft industry that says it's okay to be creative, go make something. Well, on some level, that's really great. That's sustainable scrapbooking right there because you're really not going out and buying stuff.
But a lot of it right now is already pre-prepared for you.
It's pre-prepared, but
scrapbooking is a big industry, isn't it?
It's a huge. It's a $3.6 billion industry and
billion,
huge. Since continues to mushroom over time. You know, it's a very difficult thing to say because there's it really seems to have almost grown up in a vacuum as far as its visual culture. And the visual culture I write about, I think, is much more personal and much more genuine and much more, you know, fascinating because everybody had a grandmother or a cousin or somebody. It's hard not to relate to this.
But do you think that the people who are using the ready-made scrapbooks value them just as much?
They
because
do.
That's where you ran into trouble.
I ran into some trouble. Yes, I did an interview in Salon a few weeks ago and was really called to task for some things that I said, which might have happened eventually anyway.
But you're making a point that this is like folk art almost.
It is like folk art, very much like folk art.
And by the way, WMYC's culture blog is starting a project with you, looking at how digital culture has affected the way we organize our daily lives and whether things like Facebook are the modern form of scrapbooking. We invite our listeners to participate, and we have a link to their project posted on our show page at WNYC.org. Are you prepared for the onslaught?
I don't know that I am.
Bring it on. How much does a scrapbook usually cost these days? If I go to a shop and try to buy a nice one that will have some endurance.
That you wanted to buy to make your own?
Yeah, obviously not one that I'm going to create from scratch, but...
I'm not sure I'm really prepared to comment on that, but I will say that there are so many. And one thing that's very interesting to me as someone who makes things is the degree to which the supplies that exist today are archival. So the things that, if you make a scrapbook today, use the store-bought embellishments or not, it's going to last longer than any of us. Whereas the ones from 100 years ago, nobody thought about that. Scotch tape wasn't invented until 1929, and so people used, spit and chewing gum to adhere things.
On the other hand, they probably used a higher quality paper, didn't they?
They did. They had fewer choices.
Well, the scrapbooks here are quite lovely, and I'm kind of stunned that these families let these scrapbooks out of their possession.
I've had a couple of interesting follow-up conversations with some of these families.
They've gotten back to you and said, what a mistake. Can we have it back?
Well, I had a couple bidding wars on eBay. That's my grandmother's second from the left on page 7. I'll pay you anything for this scrapbook, which, of course, they didn't want to pay anything. They just wanted the scrapbook. And it's very interesting because you learn about families and their lives all across the country. I have soldiers in this scrapbook. I have... there was a wonderful photographer, Carl Van Vechten, whose scrapbooks were given to Yale and who left his scrapbooks to Yale with a 25-year embargo that they not be open because they're filled with male pornography. And he assumed that the world would be more ready for it now. So there's so much buried in this visual culture that I think has still yet to be unearthed.
A reminder that you can check out WNYC's culture blog to find out more about our project with Jessica Helfand, looking into the evolution of scrapbooking in our digital society. And we hope to have Jessica back on our show in a few weeks to talk about our listeners' scrapbook in the digital age. Go to our show page at WNYC.org and look for the link. Meanwhile, we have this gorgeous book, Scrapbooks and American History, published by Yale University Press. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.